lessons learned, just trust is essential. And it doesn't come, you know, automatically, and it shouldn't come automatically. I think it comes with allowing each other to make mistakes and using mistakes as teachable moments for everybody.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation. New, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Welcome to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast, the podcast that brings innovations and best practices in healthcare to your podcasting app. I'm Adrienne, your host, and I'm excited to be joined by a DPI graduate and former skeptic, Dr. Seth Rinderconnect from Eskenazi Health in Indianapolis, Indiana. So without further ado, Seth, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So first off, Adrienne, I just want to give kudos to you because you've already achieved probably the most difficult part, just pronouncing my name correctly, which most people usually miss. So I'm a former National Health Service Corps scholar. Even in my medical training, I knew work with underserved populations was something that I wanted to do. So straight out of medical school residency, I came to then Wishart, now Eskenazi. I worked at Blackburn Health Center from 2009 to 2018, and then was kind of recruited to be the head doc here at Westside Health Center, which is another one of our Eskenazi health centers, where I've been since early 2018.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal DPI journey and how you got to this point all the way in 2023?
It's funny. I love to kind of tell this story because I'm the type of person who, in some ways, it serves me very well. In some ways, it gets me in trouble, but there's basically a direct link from my brain to my mouth. So, you know, when we were starting this work with Coleman at Westside, you know, I was part of that original team with Amanda Bieber, who was our manager at the time. And we had kind of our initial phone consultation with Amanda Laramie. And, you know, we're kind of having the conversation about, you know, the initial processes and things that we're going to trial and things that we're going to study and look at and et cetera. And for whatever reason, just out of my mouth, I said, you know, I'm going to be really honest with you. Like, I have a lot of reservations about someone who's doesn't see patients telling me how to best see patients. And I think it's a little bit of a common perception. And I think there's some different reasons for that. You know, I think sometimes there might be some ego to it, but I think the deeper thing, and for me, the reason that's kind of my knee-jerk reaction is because it's like we pour our heart and souls into this job. It's not a 9-to-5. It's a profession. For many of us, it's a calling. So you feel like you're doing your job very well, exactly how you're doing it when you're working so hard at it. So that was kind of the beginning of my introduction to Coleman was, you know, I don't believe you, prove it to me, basically. And so for me, the thing that really kind of opened my mind a little bit and really got me energized about some of this work, because the biggest kind of hesitation is the focus on some of the metrics like cycle time. Like, guess what? I don't want to rush through patients and jam as many patients through as possible and be quick to the next patient. And when I realized that that's not really what cycle time is, that's where I personally kind of got on board. So what I mean when I say that is, you know, we shadowed patient visits and I did it myself personally. You know, I would, my little administrative time, right? As a patient came in the front door of our health center, I just kind of walk with them and just be with them through their whole experience through an entire visit. And what we saw in our initial data, which I know is really similar at many other health centers, is that statistically like 40% of a patient's time in our health center, and this wasn't just one patient, you know, it's multiple patients, multiple experiences. We had a good, you know, a good number of observations, but 40% of a patient's time was spent with no one, in front of no one, not with a nurse, a social worker, a financial counselor, a pharmacist, you know, their physician. with anyone. So like clear wasted time and basically recognizing that, you know, if you can cut that out, if you can cut out that waste where a patient is just sitting, you know, back in the day, it was sitting reading like expired People magazine. Now it's sitting playing games on their phone, right? But that's not why you come to the doctor. So if we could cut that out, like a patient's time is used more efficiently in the health center and things go more smoothly. So that, you know, kind of walking the walk with a patient is what turned it for me. One thing I didn't mention just in introducing myself, I have like Lean Six Sigma training. So I did kind of went through that and have a Six Sigma black belt. And that's really just to say that I am kind of like a data nerd and love to think about innovative ways to do things. And so I think that piece of it, like recognizing that the data bore out that we can do something different, that kind of really opened my mind to trying new things as well.
Yeah. And I should say, you know, I always knew we were going to get along because Coleman Associates, like me, I think we really do see safety net organizations as part of a calling to make sure that everybody gets really exceptional healthcare. And I wonder if you could just talk about what you view as the health impact of lowered cycle times or lowered no-show rates. Like, why does that matter to you as a clinician?
It's an easy question for me to answer because the thing, you know, working in a federally qualified health center for the last 15 years, you recognize that the biggest barrier really for any patient is just access, right? There are more patients, more people in need than we have, you know, appointments and doctors and nurses to take care of them. So any way that we can improve access, you know, you can't help a patient with their health if you don't know them, right? I stole this from a mentor of mine within Eskenazi, Broderick Bryant, who's a family physician, chief physician executive at Eskenazi Health Center Forest Manor. He always said, you know, and I learned this from him to be true, you know, we can give the best medical care through relationships. And so if you form relationships with these folks and you, you know, have room for them to come in and you keep that continuity and that access, that's really what cycle times come down to. Because, you know, if patients are here and their time is used efficiently and, you know, we're really utilizing the team to their potential and we're using those appointments that we have, we can kind of maximize our impact on the community that we're serving.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for a little bit of context for our listeners, basically, you met Coleman Associates back in 2018, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
And you all went through our 9-month collaborative, and then your organization went through another 9-month collaborative with more sites, if I remember correctly. And then your organization is kind of going through a refresh at this point. And I wonder if you could just talk about sort of, my guess is that once you realized the cycle time thing, it wasn't all easy from that point on. What were some of the successes and the challenges that you ran into?
You know, I think it, like anything, and we certainly see it in healthcare, you know, things go in ebb and flow. I think the biggest barriers are just, you know, staffing, consistency, the way that your teams are set up. And I think with anything new, whether it be process improvement, whether it be looking at, you know, certain quality markers or whatever, with anything new, my experience is if there's a wrench in the gears at all, anywhere, a little small wrench, that new thing is the first thing to go, right? And so there was a small wrench called COVID that happened kind of not too long after we implemented some of this stuff and our staffing changed. As an organization, we were actually super pliable at that time and adjusted and, you know, redeployed folks and provided care in different ways, which was all necessary and great. But now you don't have your little perfect model of your, you know, two MAs that you've spent time teaching over the last year. And, you know, another thing, and it's not really a kind of a tenet of, you know, Coleman process improvement, but as part of that, I always kind of think of my MA just like I would a medical student who's rotating with me, right? So anything I can teach from my area of expertise and they teach things to me from what they're seeing and what they're hearing from patients. But like any way we can teach, it benefits them. And then it secondarily comes back and benefits me as they're able to do more. So, you know, when there's turnover in staffing, that becomes a challenge. I would say the successes are, you know, just opening up to that process and doing it as a team. When it works, it's a great way to develop trust among that team. And trust is essential for it to work. But then, you know, as you're going using some of these tools and you see like, oh, my MA's doing a great job at this, even without trying it, it kind of grows that trust, which I think is important too.
Yeah. And my guess is that, you know, I'm going to tap into the data nerd side of you, which is what sort of outcomes did you see? And maybe you could start us off, because I'm sure that there's some clinicians that are listening being like, okay, but maybe he sees one patient per hour, right? And that's why this works. So can you just give us a sense of like, what's your goal in terms of productivity? And then what sort of outcomes have you seen from your journey?
I don't know. I promise you, I don't see one patient an hour. Most health systems have some type of, you know, standard template or what have you. My typical template would be 10 patients in a 4-hour session. So, you know, roughly 8 to noon. This morning, I'm a family physician, if I didn't say that. So I see adults, see kids. I used to do prenatal care and deliver babies. I don't do that anymore, just from a time standpoint and other hats that I'm wearing. But, you know, so I have a mixture, but my sessions, I have kind of dedicated sessions where I'll have pediatric sessions or adult sessions, just because it seems to work a little more smoothly that way for our team, but same team for both sessions. So this morning I saw adults, saw 10 patients and was done at 12:10, and all my notes are done. And as I'm recording this podcast, my inbox is empty. Part of that is because I'm a super type A person, and you know, anytime in between anything, I'm doing little tasks. So, you know, I'm a firm believer in the age old philosophy, work hard, play hard, right? So when I'm here, I'm going to be grinding for sure and trying to minimize any wasted time and things like that. But also, you know, one of the kind of lessons learned is there's a lot about the clinical day that you can anticipate with good communication and with kind of, you know, letting go of some sacred cows as well. So yeah, so I have 5 clinical sessions a week. And, you know, if we think about 10 appointments in each of those sessions, generally each week for myself, and we collect data, you know, for everyone in our office, but for myself, you know, generally I have no missed opportunities, meaning 50 appointments, or, you know, some weeks negative missed opportunities, if that's a thing, where you've actually worked in a same day patient, or, you know, converted a nurse visit who really need the eyes of a physician or APP. I guess the most objective way to say it is that for myself and also for our health center as a whole, we have expanded access for our patients pre-DPI versus post-DPI. And while you have to, you know, we always think about, you know, burnout and, you know, just professional satisfaction, not just among doctors and APPs, but of course among our nurses and MAs. And, you know, again, to reference that little wrench of the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, that makes it a little hard to judge that. But, well, I'll say it like this. I think there's a bit of a myth that working hard when you're at work is a source of burnout. I don't think that's actually true. I think you can work hard and achieve outcomes and be really professionally satisfied, especially if you don't have a lot to bring home at the end of the day. As a whole, we've expanded access for our patients. Probably the easiest thing to say is we've not had a lot of turnover, right? If anything, we've added new staff, but we're not losing doctors. We're not losing MAs in our office and doing this work. So I think there's, you know, expanded access and keeping a good morale while doing it.
Yeah, I love to hear that. Just to kind of round out the data question is, what do you think the impact has been on quality? Is it positive, negative, neutral?
My perception is it's positive. I'll just take the example of, like, you know, cervical cancer screening, just as an example. You know, one of the things that we kind of taught the staff and started to incorporate in our robust reminder calls, so when we reach out to patients before their visit, is, you know, we'd identify any patients who are due for cervical cancer screening with pap smear, and, you know, let them know that on the call, you know, before their appointment, and, you know, just ensure that they were willing to do that testing. In the years I've been seeing patients, I've never met a female patient who responds well to, surprise, let's do your pap smear today. Oh, can we do it the next time? And then the next time turns into the next time, turns into the next time. So just that, just kind of being proactive, anticipating that, we've certainly increased those screening efforts, and that would correlate as well to other types of cancer screening or routine things. Immunization is another example where you're just kind of anticipating those things ahead of time so the team is ready, plans those things. Patients are informed, you know, communicate with them prior to the appointment, and those markers have improved as well.
Were there any unexpected benefits or lessons learned that you had or that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think lessons learned, just trust is essential, and it doesn't come, you know, automatically, and shouldn't come automatically. I think it comes with allowing each other to make mistakes and using mistakes as teachable moments for everybody. And that garners trust over time. You know, I think that the thing that prevents that is just expecting somebody to know something innately and having no tolerance when they don't know it. And then they don't try things again. You don't trust them to do things. And it's this nasty cycle. So I think it is a big part of that in terms of lessons learned is just to have grace with each other and allow mistakes to be made to learn and to grow that trust. You know, just little things like, so for example, you know, this idea of a quick start, right? Where I'm going to, my 7:45, I'm in the room of my first patient's appointment of the day and huddle for the day. And my MA will bring that first patient in the morning into the room. And like patients are so excited by that. Like, and Dr. Howe, Dawn Howe, our CEO of Eskenazi Health Centers, you know, she had actually mentioned something about how much patients like a quick start beforehand. And I kind of thought, like, you know, even before the process improvement, I didn't have terrible cycle time. I've never been one of these doctors that has patients waiting for hours and hours or anything like that. And so I kind of thought, like, you know, you're moving through efficiently. Patients aren't going to care that much if I'm sitting in the room versus, you know, but there's just something about it. Like, patients are like, oh my gosh, I'm a VIP. Like, oh, it's so exciting. Oh, you're waiting on me. I don't know. It's just the funny little, like, little special thing, a nonverbal recognition of the idea that, you know, we value your time too. Like, the healthcare system has always been like, I'm going to come there expecting to wait on my doctor or APP. But, you know, to be able to have a situation, even if it's just a couple patients a week, to say, like, I'm waiting on you. And I joke with my patients that I've known for a long period of time, look, you know, you get that VIP status, I'll be in here waiting for you when you come. Like, but that was just a little, you know, it was just a little surprising to me that, you know, consistently every patient that you do a quick start with, you know, just kind of sets the visit off on a good tone, and people are consistently just like kind of beside themselves that their doctor's waiting on them in the room when they come in.
It's such a nice thing to do, to just like kind of flip the script on the hierarchy that we normally see in medicine. Like what you said of, like, you know, really, really setting the tone, like, you know, put your money where your mouth is, I suppose, in terms of being really patient-centered with a quick start. So I'm curious, what advice would you have for listeners?
The biggest piece of advice that I would have, and I'm going to say it kind of cautiously, is just to let go of appointment times. And I'll explain what I mean when I say that. Appointment times are important. Don't get me wrong, right? We have a structure to schedule so everyone doesn't come at 1 o'clock and, you know, there's a backup, or everybody doesn't come at 4 o'clock. Like, to have some structure and expectation of when patients should come in is important. But what I've learned through this is it's really not important for me, in the sense that if I convince myself of this mind frame of, these are the 10 patients I'm going to see this morning. I don't care who I see when. I don't care what order I see them in. I'm just going to go one room to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And that order and that flow, I'm going to leave up to Mark. That's my MA. And let him manage that. You know, we spend so much time like, well, that person's 5 minutes late. So we're going to make them wait until after this person that was on time. And then we're going to see that person first. And it ends up being bad for everybody. You know, when we actually, again, kind of doing that patient walk and looking at data, to use a real world example, you know, I had a patient who was like, I don't know, 20 some minutes late. I saw her just as she flowed in the flow of things. And in that and doing it that way, really no one waits too long. And you're talking to this mom. She's got a newborn in a carrier car seat. She's got a 2.5-year-old that's walking with her, and her car broke down three blocks away, and it's 90-some degrees out. And she's going to come to our health center, and we're going to say, oh, you got to wait till the end with your newborn or your almost 3-year-old, or no, we're not going to see you. You need to reschedule because you were late for your appointment. You know, there's this kind of myth that to let go of that, those schedule reins a little bit, you're like, you know, you're reinforcing negative behavior or this or that. And again, you know, back to the data nerd, like the actual objective data doesn't support that. You know, consistently, if I just say, you know, these are the 10 patients I'm going to see, I don't care which order I see them, I'm not even going to get hung up in that. Let Mark line them up as they should be. And, you know, when I do that, sessions go smoothly. You know, back to talking about burnout, I think one of the higher contributors to burnout is expectation, right? Is how things are going with respect to your expectation. So I think we need to set expectations in a smart way. Like those of us in healthcare, you've all had the situation where, you know, you see your schedule and it looks nasty and you just are resigned in your mind, like, I'm not going to get out of here till 6 o'clock. And then you're leaving at 4:45 and you're like, oh man, this what a great day. This is amazing. And then you could have another day where things just look like cake on the schedule and you're like, man, I'm going to be out of here early. It's a nice summer day. I'm going to be out of here by 4 o'clock. And you leave at 4:30 and you're like irritated, even though you got out earlier than you did the other day when you're expecting to be there later. So my point is, like, expectations are really powerful. And if we kind of set our expectations of, these are the 10 patients I'm here to see this afternoon or this morning, and I'm going to have my staff kind of manage that in an efficient way that we all agree to at the beginning of this work, it's smoother and better for patients, but it's also freeing for me as a doctor, like, just to not have to worry about that, expect to see the patients on my schedule, and sessions, you know, tend to go really smoothly with consistency.
I have to ask you to share one story in particular, because I share it with lots of people that I coach. Did you as a doctor ever make confirmation calls?
I have, not commonly, maybe once or twice early on.
The reason I like to share that of what I remember is that at one point during your testing, you all were just dividing it up between the team and you made an equal number of confirmation calls as the rest of the team when you were trying stuff, right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. And what I think is so powerful about that example is how you set the tone for everybody that you work with. Because even, you know, as a clinician, you are an informal leader on the team, even if you are not a formal leader. And I think the way that you set the tone of we're all working as a team is part of the key to your success. And I do have to mention, just because I'm a huge Kendrick Lamar fan, that you do have a pillow behind you that says, be humble, sit down, which I understand your children got for you, but I love Kendrick Lamar. And I just wonder if you could talk about that in terms of how you set the tone for that teamwork.
So just to clarify, my children did not get me this pillow. They just think it's corny. No, you're fine. But I like it. So that's what matters, right? You know, attitude is contagious. Like, we see examples of that in healthcare, and you see examples of that in any other, you know, setting where you're meant to work together as a team. And, you know, be it negative or positive, that attitude is going to be contagious. So if I want to be surrounded with MAs and nurses, or even colleagues who are proactive and patient-centered, and that patient-centered is a really important piece of it too, you know, I need to model that, and I want to model that, right? And it's why we're here, and it does make things, you know, go more smoothly as a team. I think when you're working in, and not to get too philosophical or go too far off the tracks, but I think when you're working in a stressful environment, which by definition, right, healthcare in itself is stressful. You're working with people who have, you know, high acuity of illness, often limited resources or social barriers. That in itself is stressful. And I think it can be a common kind of coping mechanism to kind of, you know, leave a session or leave a patient room and be negative, right? Oh, can you believe this patient, blah, 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 or this, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, several years ago, I kind of made the conscious decision to just say, no matter what, with my staff in our health center, no matter what scenario, I'm never going to speak negatively of a patient under any circumstances. And that's not to say there's not times that I might be frustrated, you know, choices someone makes or ways someone behaves in the health center or, you know, interactions. You know, it's not to say that we're all human, but just to say like where you're focusing your energy and what you're trying to achieve, you know, you learn the lesson over and over. That's not a fruitful way to work. So I think that kind of sets the tone for not just the team, but a health center as well. You know, it's easy for us to say like we're here for the patients, but to really live that, like we're actually here for our patients. You know, I think that, you know, plays to the energy and the proactivity and the motivation to do good work as well.
Yeah. So if I could summarize for our listeners in terms of what you could do differently leaving today, and what I took from what Dr. Rinderknecht said was, first of all, building trust within your team and really thinking about how you're setting the tone for your team, keeping things very patient-centered and making that conscious decision to not speak ill of a patient. I love that. That's definitely what we try and do on our CHISPA team. And then if I was going to say a third one, it sounds like quick start. Quick start can make patients very happy and sticking to the data. I just want to share like, well, the main reason I wanted to have you on this podcast, Dr. Rinderknecht, is, you know, we have plenty of people that come to us that are skeptical, and with very good reason, because frankly, most healthcare consultants suck, if I was just going to like paint broad brush, right? And like, I always think about that quote from George Bernard Shaw of, those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. And I just love how you changed your mind for good reasons. And I hope that our listeners get the opportunity to learn a lot from this episode. So thanks so much for sharing your insights. For everyone who's listening, make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, just shoot us an email at notify@ColemanAssociates.com or reach out to us on social media. To keep up with all of the CHISPA happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. Shout out to Nikolai for all of his podcasting help, and we'll see you next time.